Welcome to Scouting for Growth. Today, I am meeting with Sam Evans, partner at EOS Venture Partners, a strategic venture capital fund and an insurtech investment specialist with offices in London and Philadelphia. I met with Sam at the launch of the podcast, and that was episode 6. And today we decided to dive into the sustainability and ESG topic. So please listen to this interview to get to know about EOS, EOS strategic lens on ESG too. We will talk about the impact of urbanization, climate risk, and supply chain risk. We'll talk about business models, and we'll also share with you what insurtechs are doing in these specific areas. So let's get started. Welcome to Scouting for Growth. Today, I am meeting with Sam Evans. Sam is a partner at EOS Venture Partners, a strategic venture capital fund and an insurtech investment specialist with offices in London and Philadelphia. You all met Sam in episode 2, actually, of Scouting for Growth, when we talked a little bit about sustainability already, but focused on Sam and EOS a little bit more. So for those who have not listened to this podcast yet, well, I met Sam many years back, and Sam helped me actually with my accelerators many years ago. And since we have helped many startups either get funding or learn to work within our insurtech landscape. So thank you, Sam, for being with me again today.
Yeah. Hi, Sabine. Thank you for the invitation.
Today, we want to address the world of sustainability and ESG. So we will talk about the impact of urbanization, climate risk, and supply chain risk. So let's get started. So a few bits of definition. ESG stands for environmental. This criterion looks at the impact of resource consumption from business on the environment, like carbon footprint, waste, water discharges, among other environmental impact. Social relates to criteria looking at how a business interacts with its local communities that include internal policy related to labor, diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. And the J of governance relate to internal practices and policies that lead to the effect of decision-making from leaders and legal compliance as well. ESG facilitate top line growth if it is run and delivered in the right way. So over the past few months, Sam and I have actually evaluated a number of tech startups actually that are starting to enter the insurtech space and solving for ESG principles. So Sam, what's your view of ESG? And what is your definition of ESG within our sustainable or sustainability change, which we are seeing more and more companies taking advantage of today?
Yeah, thanks, Sabine. So, yeah, I mean, if you take a step back, I think as a global economy, we're facing a number of really quite pivotal challenges. You've obviously got some major weather-related events linked to climate change and how that's flowing through to natural catastrophes. Obviously insurance has a key role to play, but at the same time, we're seeing significant changes in terms of population dynamics with many parts of the world, aging populations and creating the right infrastructure to support those parts of the ecosystem. And then similarly, urbanization with significant proportion of the population moving into cities with all the challenges that creates. So, fundamentally, we think insurance has a key role to play in supporting these, major macro shifts and changes. But actually, when you break it down, insurtech could really be the driving force for the insurance industry in actually tackling some of these ESG agendas, because a lot of the solutions sort of relying on either a technology play or better use of data or accessing different data sources, to come at the problem from a different perspective. So ultimately, we really sort of see InsurTech as playing a fundamental role in taking the industry forward. And, it's fair to say insurance has done some good things, I think, around the ESG agenda, but there's so much more potential. There's so much more scope. We could and should be doing a lot more. So, we're highly motivated to support from an InsurTech perspective. And actually to link it back to our fund, we have a target of having a positive impact on 500 million lives through the underlying portfolio companies by sort of incorporating ESG related aspects into our investment decisions. So that's everything from helping to close the protection gap, looking at supply chain issues, which we'll come to talk to, as well as quality of care, access of care, and all those associated issues. So looking forward to diving into that in more detail.
Thank you, Sam. So let's look at urbanization. Actually, you already touched on this issue. To give everyone a little bit of an intro, urbanization refers to moving population growth from rural towns to metropolitan areas, allowing city and towns to grow. This is also called progressive increase of population living in towns to urban areas. The concept alters city lives, village economic, social mileage, social economic privileges as well. Today, 56% of the world population now lives in cities. The biggest change actually has been in Latin America and in the Caribbean, with 81 to 82% of the population in urban areas, up from 41% since, I would say, the 1950s. By 2030, at least 61% of urban populations will be living in cities. 2 billion people in the world will actually live in slums. So what does it mean for you, Sam, around some of the things we need to consider when we start looking at urbanization and urban risk?
Yeah, so for us, and obviously there's many, many aspects to this. So we're really applying a InsurTech lens, and where we think InsurTech can play a role in helping to facilitate that major shift and transformation in a lot of economies. Just a few areas, just to highlight. Obviously, quality of and access to healthcare is going to be critical. As we face growing populations, and actually also as well links to the aging issue that I mentioned earlier on. Here we're looking at the ability to leverage different ways of thinking about insurance and making it less about a pure protection driven product, but actually transitioning more into a prevention type focus. So that's engaging with people earlier in different ways to help them live longer and healthier lives. In one sense, that sort of adds to the challenge, but clearly there's a lot that can be done to make healthcare more affordable, easier to access, but also a lot more efficient. At the moment, there's so much sort of inefficiencies in the system because everything is done on a sort of generic basis rather than being tailored to the individual. And actually, and this applies, I think, to a lot of these areas, but insurance is the natural infrastructure, if you like, to plug these things together, because from an insurance perspective, it's also about cost efficiency. And if we can drive better efficiency through the system, obviously they pay less claims, it's in everyone's interest, it lowers the premiums, have greater coverage. So looking at areas around life sciences and health tech, which links to things like wellness, nutrition, sleep, activity, and embedding those within an insurance infrastructure to provide people with the right access to care, but also tailored to them as an individual, so that it's a lot more efficient in terms of usage of drugs and when and how best to tackle diseases within the body, etc. I think we can see the combination of insurance and health tech / life sciences as playing a key role in that perspective. Other interesting areas, obviously, as we move to a more urban-based economy, the ways of working change significantly. we'll see a lot more, I think, gig economy based workers. What we're seeing already at the moment is that traditional insurance solutions are just not fit for purpose because they're generic. Again, they're not usage based. They don't align with the underlying behaviors of the policyholder. So when I talked about closing the protection gap, sort of obviously there's a, immediate thought goes to the developing markets, but there is a, a huge need within the more mature economies where, taking the US as an example, I think, close to 50% of the population score, badly from a credit risk perspective, and they're therefore penalized through the cost of their insurance. So the ability to tailor, usage-based coverage that switches seamlessly between personal and commercial usage. For example, if you're using your vehicle for a rideshare scheme, becomes very, very relevant for individuals. So making, again, insurance more affordable so that, it goes right through through the population, and particularly the people with more need who are currently struggling, given that there's just, inherent inbuilt biases within the system that penalises them, when again, it's not necessarily a true reflection of the underlying risk. So that sort of protection gap linked to new ways of working, new ways of behaving, I think insurtech will be a key driver. And maybe one final comment, which again is sort of another adjacent part to that piece, is probably moving into different types of ownership models. So a lot more car, around car sharing. We'll need to leverage, electric vehicles, at some point in the future, autonomous vehicles. Again, traditional insurance solutions are just not fit for purpose for those types of models. So we need to think about how best to structure insurance to provide the right level of coverage at affordable rates, and embedded, typically, embedded within the underlying platforms that are enabling the new usage model. So InsurTech naturally, I think, aligns with those types of changes. And actually, I'll throw one more into the mix, because I think energy usage and efficiency gain is going to become a lot more important. We have to be much more focused and smart around how we're using resources. And again, technology can play a key role, even if you look at it simply from a, a home perspective and energy usage. And using IoT and sensors and, smart AI to improve behaviors and enhance efficiency, lower energy usage, even looking at, to the extent we can move to more, circular based business models that again, sort of have that drive around reusability and just cutting down on waste, because, clearly we're living currently, really an unsustainable way, which we have to address if we're going to be smarter going forward.
So it's interesting, because you actually highlighted quite a few opportunities, right, for insurers. Health, health and health hazard provide opportunity to do something better, partly, for people who are healthy or could continue to be healthy, but people who are probably needs a little bit of advice on health. I would say I would include as well in there to consideration around health and homelessness, because actually you also need, usually we think about people who can afford, but then you also touch upon financial resilience and affordability. So another big area, I think, when you start looking at urbanization, you look at health hazard, you look at homelessness, and then we look at how we can use technology to better serve ourselves. We mentioned health tech, age tech as well for the elderly, but also electric vehicles, which for me goes into how can we get better around air pollution reduction, waste management, but also water, right? Water pollution. So when you look at some of the concept around electric vehicle and using technology to enable us to do things a bit better, that is where I can see potentially some opportunity, touching on some of the major challenges we have to deal with in cities. What's your view around deforestation? How are insurers dealing with deforestation? When we build homes in cities, we're actually taking the trees away. And I've seen a number of organizations looking at deforestation or reforestation as an opportunity as well for innovation. Have you seen some of this as well happen with your LPs or the insurers you're working with, Sam?
Yeah, of course, it's certainly a major area of focus. And interestingly, maybe just to draw something that's maybe a little bit new. So obviously, you know, InsurTech is always looking at product innovation and how to serve parts of the market that are currently, you know, lacking in coverage. And we made a business recently that are looking to provide insurance for the voluntary carbon markets. So where obviously, you know, large organizations are buying carbon credits, which are linked to, or often linked to, you know, reforestation and you know, all those good activities. There's currently no insurance market for those credits. So if something happens to the underlying, you know, plantation, then how can that be addressed, and how can we again create more protection and sustainability within the cycle? So yeah, there's always these, you know, new business models looking to come into the market where there's a gap, and look at innovative solutions to provide coverage. So I thought that was quite an interesting business model.
So you also mentioned a few business model already, which I want to highlight. So you mentioned usage base. So a lot of the innovation which is coming right now to deal with the urbanization risk, look at usage-based insurance, so as a service. You mentioned embedded. You mentioned also a circular economy. And I think I can see potentially parametric models as well playing very well in this type of environment. What are for you the potential challenges insurers are going to face in looking to implement some of those new business models, Sam?
I think, I don't know that initially specific to the ESG agenda, I think there are probably similar challenges around just the economy is moving so rapidly. And, you know, if when you break down sort of the traditional insurance products, you know, they fundamentally haven't changed for, you know, 100 plus years. You can maybe even say 300 years in some instances. So they're always, not just always, but they're typically, you know, static, historical looking solutions. They're very reliant on very detailed modeling that's been built up based on, you know, historical patterns. But of course, what we're seeing now is because things are moving so rapidly, you know, climate models from 10 years ago are almost certainly out of date. So insurers need to transition to a much more real-time assessment of risk, and it needs to be linked more specifically to behavioral characteristics rather than proxy static factors built on these historical models. And making that transition is obviously, it's incredibly difficult for insurers to make that shift, because it's turning their business model almost upside down, and it's not something you can do overnight with a huge organization. So that whilst this is a bad analogy for an ESG conversation, but the oil tanker analogy is a good fit. It takes a long time to turn the ship. So I think those are probably the main challenges. And then I guess, you know, being able to move in an agile, flexible way, because new needs are going to be popping up, you know, as the economies make this transition. So being flexible enough to actually adapt your business model and product solution and distribution models to fit those needs, again, I think will be key.
Absolutely. And I realize for sure for the business model, they are probably universal, is a shift from A to B, and it's not easy for large enterprises. So let's look now probably at something which is but closer to the heart of a lot of insurers out there, which is climate change, and probably the initiative that everybody is talking about right now in terms of ESG. So a little bit of an introduction around climate change. The average global temperature has risen by 1.1 degree centigrade, Celsius, since the 18th century. It continues to increase. Don't underestimate this seemingly small figure, because it's actually massive. This little increase has a massive impact on society, on climate itself. I don't know whether you saw a few days ago, actually, Sam, it wasn't snowing in London. And I understand it's snowing in Zurich, whilst it was snowing as well in Tokyo when I was talking to one of my Japanese partners. So it's snowing when it's not supposed to snow. And I think we had also a wonderful sun a few days ago, 19 degrees as well. So we had two or three seasons in just 1 week. So we have seen month of rains, and we have seen snow, we have seen sun, and this is affecting us all. And also droughts, and in Africa, for instance. So it sounds terrifying, I think. At the human level, it is catastrophic, not least because climate change doesn't impact everyone equally. The hardest hit are often the people in a poorest country, as we all know. And so we need to find best way to cope with it. So when we were doing some research, actually, Sam, around climate risk and climate tech, we found out that over 500 billion have already been invested in climate tech companies. They are not just in InsurTech. A lot of those companies are outside our industry, from solar energy to what you mentioned earlier, electric vehicle and autonomous driving, wind energy, food tech, crop tech, to name but a few, and fashion tech, which I'm passionate about. So what do you think are the things we can learn right now to be more effective when we start looking at climate change and climate risk?
Yeah, clearly it's a massive area, isn't it? And I spent many years living in Australia, and just, you know, looking back over the last 12 months there, where they've suffered, you know, horrendous wildfires. And then within several months, they're facing, you know, 100-year event floods in the same in the same location. So you're almost seeing, you know, the extremes of weather, and it's occurring a lot more frequently. And clearly, as you said, you know, having a devastating impact on economies and individuals. So for us, yeah, this is a very interesting area, and again, it's a natural fit for InsurTech, because a lot of it's driven by new modeling techniques, new data. So maybe just a couple of ideas and things that are certainly interesting for our perspective. And I should say, obviously, as well, you know, responding to natural catastrophes is an area where the insurance industry as a whole, you know, is already doing a huge amount of work, and there's a lot of initiatives to try and reduce the protection gap. But clearly, you know, I forget the exact numbers, but it's still a huge proportion of, particularly those, you know, very vulnerable economies and populations that are lacking insurance. So fundamentally, coming back down to closing that protection gap is going to be important. But from an InsurTech perspective, some of the things we're seeing is use of different data sets, as I mentioned. So geospatial imagery is a good example. So there's now a lot of, you know, satellite imagery available. There's a few different techniques that we've seen. But yeah, the ability to have a much granular, you know, view and understanding of how weather patterns are changing and the impact that has on flood and other sort of related risks, wildfires, you know, degradation to the landscape, and all those types of issues. You know, a lot of that information can now be assessed from satellites, even, you know, quality of crops, identifying issues. So, quite a fundamental, you know, advance, I think, really, in our capability. So leveraging that data and then linking it through to insurance coverage and solutions, I think, is certainly an area of interest. You mentioned parametric earlier. Again, that's a nice fit, I think, you know, for these types of issues. So there's obviously quite a few now focusing on this space. But I guess, you know, an obvious example is around, you know, agricultural markets in developing markets, where, you know, you can almost instantly respond to either adverse weather events or issues in the supply chain, come to talk to you in a second. But yeah, where there's a crop failure for whatever reason, you know, you can have automatic payouts that are linked to those trigger events, so that, you know, money is being delivered to the people in need at, you know, optimum time. You're not reliant on, you know, a 3-month long process that requires someone to, you know, a crop assessor to do a physical assessment of the property. Because, as I said, it could be done using satellite imagery. So yeah, that new data, parametric, triggers, I think, really interesting. Other applications as well are looking at, you know, next generation modeling. So as I said earlier, you know, using historical climate models, you know, is challenging given the pace of change and how quickly, you know, the world is moving on that, on those types of issues. So there are several businesses that we've met recently that are looking at how they can, you know, leverage cutting edge modeling techniques to provide much more granular, much more accurate, you know, view of risk, which leads on to then another interesting area, which is thinking about, you know, active risk management, resilience, and, yeah, if we understand how things are likely to develop, then we can be much, you know, smarter in terms of preparation and even advanced warnings of you know, severe weather events, and seeing what can be done in advance to reduce the severity of the impact when those types of things, things land. That extends through, you know, from a reinsurance perspective, looking at risk accumulation. Again, you can look at that on a sort of global basis, and, you know, where we've had big events in the past, people haven't really understood, I don't think, you know, the accumulation of risk that exists. But now the data is available to start looking at that again in real time, so that you can either put in place additional protection or take measures to then reduce severity in the event that, you know, adverse weather events or equivalent are expected.
So it's interesting because a lot of the innovation, I think, is which is coming, seems to be focusing on physical risk, right? The physical building, on, you know, an asset which we can touch and feel. But there is another part of what is happening with climate, which actually links to liability risk, like people risk, right? Being, you know, workers' risk, fatality, which we also need to pay attention to. There is a third area of risk, which is a balance between the two, which is called transition risk, which is literally, I think, addressing the fact that business models are moving, right? Think about BP, Total. They actually have to move their business model from dealing with renewable energy, from sort of fossil fuel energy, to actually moving to renewable energy, and that affects, you know, the complete business model, right? And to the way they do business, and also the solution and capability they use to actually continue to be profitable entities. What are your views as to how insurers and the corporate they support are dealing together, you know, in addressing the climate risk?
I think, honestly, I think we're still at the early days of what's possible. A lot of the things that we see are quite disparate, fragmented. I think, you know, the industry, I guess, again, obviously we've had other challenges to manage over the last, you know, 24 months, 18 months, 24 months. It's not been the easiest time, has it? But I think, you know, the will is there to make this happen, and there are obviously some great organisations that are helping to facilitate and you know, pull together. You know, Blue Marble is a good example. We work with them, have done at different times. So the infrastructure is being created. I think the commitment is there, the drive is there, but just lacking something to sort of pull it all together to really make a, you know, much more meaningful impact, because there's different, obviously, ways of, you know, coming to look at, you know, where industries are at in terms of their performance from an ESG perspective. Financial services typically falls, you know, towards the back of the pack. And, you know, given our positioning, I think we should really be thinking about how we can move to the front and take a leading role.
Yeah, no, interesting. Still a lot to be done. I often think, how can the organization we're working with work more closely and understand the challenges faced by, you know, the large corporates who have to go through that change themselves. So therefore have to make choices which need to be insured, that will require insurance in the future, sometimes unknown, which means that, you know, the insurers who participate are involved in some of these initiatives earlier on than late, actually goes through understanding the transformation. A lot of industries are going to have to deal with right now.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, when you think about insurance, it touches every single part of the economy. So it's a natural enabler for driving these initiatives.
So I just would like to jump into now supply chain to actually close the cycle. So supply chain management was once a logistical process confined to the job description of a few. Now supply chain management is far more prominent. Individual customers are aware of supply chain problems. We have experienced that all during the course of the past 24 months in ways that we have never seen before. And supply chains have become a hot geopolitical and social topic and an economic one as well. It is increasingly worthy of our attention as an emerging risk. As McKinsey says, the world is getting riskier. Today, supply chains are inherently more complex, facing significant challenges. Indeed, it is impossible to argue that many specific risks feed into supply chain risk as a melting pot where hazard become a reality. So when you look at what we face today and what we've experienced actually, Sam, over the course of the past few months, what do you see as our supply chain risk here in Europe, and what are our opportunities?
Yeah, again, obviously it's a very, very topical issue. And if COVID pandemic has again had a massive impact, and whereas if you go back a few years, I guess a lot of the motivations around supply chain was all driven by cost. Getting the most cost-effective model, leveraging global infrastructure. I think there is definitely a shift now to also, getting a balance between cost and reliability and certainty, particularly given the macroeconomic environment and political environment, which is just adding to the challenges. So economies are going to want to have greater control of their supply chains and resource needs and all those associated issues. So. Certainly, a very volatile time. Just taking a very narrow sort of insurtech lens to it, there are already a number of businesses that are working, focusing on this part of the market. There's probably two lenses where we see maybe the most attention. The first is around actually understanding, and I mentioned it a little bit earlier, the risk accumulation issues associated with supply chains. I think the Tianjin port fire is a nice example, which ended up being a huge insurance loss. And a lot of it actually, obviously there was physical damage created through the event at the port, but I think the bigger loss actually came through all the business interruption claims when you sort of recognize that all the motor manufacturers, for example, and all the parts that were, being kept at the port for shipping to overseas markets just devastated a lot of the manufacturing supply chain. So again, it comes back to modeling and data and a better understanding of events and what that could mean from a risk accumulation coverage to a total loss perspective. So again, being much more efficient, effective, smart around managing those risks, I think is interesting, and insurtech can play a key role. And the other part is actually thinking about efficiency within the supply chain. So a lot of that links back to the use of IoT. There are businesses that are able to track the movement of goods from warehouse all the way through, or sorry, factory all the way through to warehouse, and then warehouse through to end user. And looking at, why are we seeing a spike in claims or issues with that particular part of the value chain or supply chain, and you can actually go in and address that and find out what's going wrong at that particular point. Managing temperature, for example, in containers for drug, there's a lot of damage or a lot of issues created by drugs being unusable because of temperature changes in as they move through the supply chain. So IoT again provides you with real-time data on those types of metrics. So again, you can be proactive in terms of how you're looking to manage potential inefficiencies within the supply chain. So I think, yeah, InsurTech linked to IoT, linked to supply chain is an interesting area. And actually one of our portfolio companies, Consirus, do a lot of work in that space, and would certainly be a good place to start if anyone is interested in doing a deep dive.
Yeah, I was talking to Andy recently, and it's interesting because I know you already highlighted that within our climate change section, but I think there are things we can also learn from climate into supply chain. You know, there's geospatial data you mentioned. Now we are looking at geopolitical terrorist data potentially, right, to actually determine what may happen on the supply chain. We've seen as well, you mentioned the modeling. I think you are looking at flood modeling now. You're actually probably looking at maritime modeling potentially here to see what is going to happen with ships on the sea. You can also look at maybe something we didn't mention in the previous section, digital twins, where you're actually able to replicate a specific asset and see what may, and create some scenarios to see what may occur to that asset based on action or events taking place in other markets, in other countries. And then I think, again, the things you were mentioning earlier around the shift in business model, around the insurance as a service, the embedded, the parametrics also may come into play to start changing the way the product and services are being designed, I think, Sam.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And that's one thing we haven't mentioned is that, yeah, sort of risk management, safety component, which links to the digital twins. And again, there's a heavy IoT, sort of link there. But, you know, there's the ability to look, track, monitor activity, identify, you know, behaviours that are causing maybe injuries to employees and fixing those issues within the sort of workplace. So, you know, ultimately done in the right way, insurance/insurtech is enabling more affordable cover, and also the ability to reach parts of the market which are currently underinsured or lacking insurance coverage. But I think as valuable is then making that transition away from being purely about a protection-based solution. Something bad has happened. Here's some cash to sort of cover that loss. But actually to think about prevention, prediction, using the data more in a smarter way to actually get ahead of some of these issues. So you're reducing both your frequency and severity of incidents. Yeah. And that links through to everything. And it's creating safer environments for people. And it links back to healthier lifestyles and all those associated aspects. So, when you take a step back, as I said earlier, there's so much that can be done by just thinking about those three or four key aspects and putting that together into a more integrated solution to cover particularly those underserved, more vulnerable parts of the economy.
Yeah. So I think for our listener, it's very important. We talk about urbanization, so urban risk. We talked about climate change and climate risk. We talk about the supply chains of the world and then supply chain risk. When you look at those three areas, you need to think about them like a matrix where you have the environment, the social, and the governance applying against each one of those different risk types. And so therefore different strategies will be deployed with regards to how any organization is addressing the E, environmental issues, the S, social, and with social innovation, people, diversity, financial resilience. And as Sam mentioned earlier, health is very key as well as part of this bucket. And then the policies and the way, the structure and the governance as to how we do this, that applies against each one of those different risk types. So what are the additional strategy or tactics could you give first to the startups which are there, the insurtechs, which may actually look for funding from you from a sustainable viewpoint, Sam? You are going to make a lot of investment and you have a very clear investment thesis looking at sustainability. So how can you help the insurtechs or the tech ventures to be more ready? Second part of the question would be, what would you say to our insurance partners, the insurers, LPs who are working with you as well around how they get to start embracing some of those changes, particularly those who have not started yet?
Sure. Two good questions. I think on the first one, on the insurtechs, As I said earlier, you know, we have a that objective of trying to have a positive impact on 500 million lives through the underlying portfolio companies. And as a more general observation, your purpose-led businesses tend to be more successful across all, you know, however you look to measure those from a revenue, profitability, valuation perspective. So I think being very clear around how ESG is embedded into your business model and the impact that you can have and the scale of that impact certainly is helpful for investors like ourselves and sort of understanding the problem that you're looking to solve and how you're going about that in the most effective and efficient way possible. So I guess that's about the messaging, clarity of purpose, and having a making sure that's integrated into the business model and the financial projections in a way that's hopefully easy for investors to understand. On the flip side of the coin, I think for the insurers, obviously there's already a lot of great work being done. But I guess in our observations, a lot of that is built around the traditional, mechanism that the industry has, which is great. And there's all for that continuing. I guess we would encourage people to think a little bit outside of the box. And as I said, truly believe InsurTech can be the driving force for the industry around ESG. So think about how they can use and leverage some of these new business models to tackle some of these issues, I think would be time well spent.
Absolutely. Highly, highly insightful, actually. And another point, actually, you highlighted, which I would like to stress as well, is when we look at the InsurTech organizations which are there, they are in different stages of evolution. And you have in your portfolio companies you've invested years ago who are doing fantastic work today, which didn't start as an ESG startup, but now in the past, I would say 24 months, I've actually gradually embedded an ESG angle to their strategy, because every InsurTech have to become ESG compliant, right? So really understanding how that plays into the InsurTech value chain, but the InsurTech business will be very important, partly, in recruiting talent. I know that at the moment, recruiting people is very difficult. So having that clear purpose will be key for any business which is out there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that it's fierce at the moment now from a talent perspective. So again, and I think this is probably true for many people, but working for organizations with a clear purpose, and it's not just about making money, but actually contributing back to society is very appealing to a lot of people. So making that very clear is definitely a strong area where some of our portfolio companies have done very well in terms of bringing on leading talent from a development and other perspectives.
Absolutely. So what would be your last word of wisdom for audience and listeners, Sam? How do they get started? And what do you think should inspire them to actually embrace some of the new trends?
Yeah, I think I sort of come back to my maybe original comments. I truly believe that InsurTech can play a huge role in tackling these issues. There is significant capital to deploy. Obviously, EOS is a small part of that, but certainly, as I said, it's integral to how we're looking at investments and embedding that into our investment strategy. So the capital is there, the opportunity is there. We know there's some great people out there with a huge amount of talent. So we certainly are highly motivated to bring those three things together and, make some real change to the world.
Having started working on this topic for the past 2 years, it's fascinating to see some of the great things we can do. Even, looking at the social innovation angle, which is, about people at the end, employees, workers, but also talent coming out of school and, individual. And you mentioned quite a few times, we need to be more careful around understanding what the protection gap is about. Protection gap is about technology and also product and services not meeting the need of specific segment of the population, but it's also about building financial resilience for those who need it the most. So very wise word, Sam. If an InsurTech, an LP, whoever wants to talk to you, what should they do?
Please reach out. We're always keen to engage with multiple parts of the industry. There's through our website you can reach us. We'd love to have a conversation with anyone interested in this area.
Yeah, and also follow Sam on LinkedIn, on Twitter. We do talk to each other as well through the social media. We have been working on a couple of articles. So the urbanization article is out, and we'll have one on climate risk with some recommendation from Sam and quotes as well from Sam, and one on supply chain risk. So please take some time to look for those articles, and you'll be able to find them for sure on LinkedIn. Thank you, Sam, for your time.
Great. Thank you, Sabine.
And let's continue the conversation.
Looking forward to it.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
If you like this podcast, subscribe now, share with your friends, and if you enjoyed it, please give it a 5-star review. Also, if you want to cover any specific subject with me, contact me on Instagram under Sabine VDL Officials or LinkedIn under Sabine van der Linden. Thank you.